Hello, good evening from Yerushalayim HaKodesh and Happy Hanukkah. Today, as is the first night of Hanukkah, Kofei and Kislev, we will be discussing, again, the historical aspects, the battles of Hashmonaim, and other historical, geographical, archaeological points that we can get from this illustrious period in Jewish history. The Rambam sums up in the Halachas of Hanukkah, sums it up in the historical stuff in Hilchos Chanukah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Aleph and Halacha Beis. And the Rambam says that during Bayis Sheni, during the second Beis HaMikdash, the Greek kings were goes Xeris and Klal Yisrael and didn't let them be also Kintara Mitzvos and Pashto Yadim B'Mamonam. They took the Jews' money, Naseim and their daughters, Nechusul Lehechol, parts of Abratos, Vatimu Ataros, they went into the Hechol, and when Matame the Taros, Vatalim Yisrael Ma'od Mipneim, Velachtim Nachat Godol, and Klashah were in tremendous, suffered tremendously. Ad Sherichem Aleim Elokeb Vaseim, until Hashem had Rechmanus on them, Vashim Yadam Vitzilam, and he saved them. Vigavu B'nei Chashmonai Akoanim Agdolim Varogum. And the B'nai Chashmonai were victorious and defeated them, Voshir Yisrael Miyadam, and they saved Klal Yisrael. V'amidu Melech Min HaKohanim, and they appointed a king from the Kohanim, the Chashmonai family. V'chazer Malchus Yisrael Yesal Mazayim Shana Adachur Ben HaSheni. And Malchus was restored for Klal Yisrael for over 200 years until the Chur Ben HaSheni. And in Halacha Beis, the Rambam goes in and tells a story that we all know, that when they went into the Heichal on it was the 25th of Kislev, and they didn't find they found the jar of oil that was enough to light oil for one day, and it was b'chosam of the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and they were able to light the menorah 8 nights until they crushed olives and were able to produce tahor oil. So we're going to talk about this period, the Hellenistic period, the Hashmonai period. We gave one share on that a few years ago, a couple of editions and explanations. Where if we start with the beginning of the, first of all, just the background of the period, and based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah in Daf Tes, we have the chronology of the second Beis HaMikdash period. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Tes says like this: Malchus Pars Bifnei Abayis Shloshim Ve'Arba Shana. The Persian Empire was the second Beis HaMikdash stood for 420 years. The Persian Empire ruled for 34 years. Malchus Yovam of Nehabayis Meiris Manim Shana. The Greek, the Hellenistic Malchus was 180 years. Malchus Chashmonai of Nehabayis Meiris Shalosh. The Chashmonai dynasty ruled for 103 years. And Malchus Beis Hardus Meiris Shalosh. And the Herodian dynasty for 103 years. And Kan Ve'elach, Tzev Chashav Kamashan Machachu Ben Abayis. So the Gemara says you have 420 years, divided up, as we said, 34 years the Persian Empire, 180 years Hellenistic Malchus, 103 years Chashmonai, 103 years Hardus, and then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So if we analyze this, well, first of all, we're not going to get into the issue of the Persian chronology, which is before the period that we're talking about, and a complicated thing in itself. But first of all, the Rambam had said that the result of the Chashmonai victory was that they appointed a king from the Kohanim, and Chazar Malchus Yisrael for more than 200 years, no doubt is based on this Gemara, where the Gemara says that the Malchus Beis Chashmonai is 103 years, Malchus Beis Hardus is 103 years, that gives it a total of 206 years, so that's over 200 years Jewish Malchus. So the Rambam counts Malchus Beis Hardus also as a Jewish Malchus. If we analyze the years and we backtrack, there are a couple discrepancies. If the Churban took place, that's a big machlokas. Rambam toast was Rashi in Avodah Zarah over there. Which year the Churban took place? Rashi says it took place in the year 68. Rambam and Tosfos argue whether it took place in the year 69 or the year 70. On the slide over here, I work back from the year 70 to work backwards, and let's see how things fit in. The Gemara says Malchus Beis Hardus 103 years. It takes you to the year 33 BCE. Hardus actually became king in the year 36 BCE, which could mean that Chazal are counting over here from the year 68 putting you back 2 years, or Hardus became king, but until he actually assumed power, it took a while. If we go back further to the Hashmonai dynasty, 136 BCE, according to the Book of the Maccabees, the Malchus Hashmonai began a little before that. So again, this Gemara seems to be going on an early, or working off the year 68, like Rashi Shita, and not like the year 70. And the Greek Empire, according to the year over here, begins in the year 316 BCE. Now this creates a problem, this creates a big problem actually, but if we want to find a certain year for the Greek Empire, we would be looking at the year 312, 313, which is the beginning of Minyan Shtoros, the first year of Minyan Shtoros, the Seleucid method of counting. Until then, and we gave a whole shiur on that also, until then the counting was based on the king, and every time the king died, a new king was appointed, a new method of counting began, a new system, and therefore it's very hard to compile a chronological list of how the years passed, because every time it's a new king, don't know exactly what year he became king, etc. The Seleucids began a new method of counting, and that was a successive counting. No matter who the king is, we continue counting year after year. That's called Minyan Shtoros. And that's what the Gemara says in Gittin, Bagola in Monim El Malchei Yavon Bilvad, that in the Golos, in a get, you can only be counting according to Malchei Yavon. That's talking about Minyan Shtoros, which is the Seleucid method of counting. Eventually, the Seleucid method became obsolete, and Klal Yisrael switched to the method that we use today, which is the year of Bias Ha'olam. The Ammonites, for example, they continue to count Ad Hayom for Minyan Shtoros. The Rambam, you see that he was like in a transition period, and in his Halachos and Shemitah Yovel, he goes through both methods. He talks about the year for the Chorban, and he talks about the year after the Chorban, and not Bria Sava, he talks about the year of the Chorban, and he talks about the year of Minyan Shtoros. But he was evidently at a transition period when Minyan Shtoros was still used. Today, as I said, no one uses Minyan Shtoros. But anyway, so again, we'd be talking about 312, 313 is the beginning of the Seleucid counting. And so again, this Gemara seems to be more fitting to, if we move back the year of the Chorban to the year 68, like Rashi Shita, so then the dates fit much better. Now, of course, the discrepancy of a year or two is things happen in the middle of the year, at the end of the year, you know, you can always be missing or adding a year here and there, so it's not really proof, but that's basically the idea. Now, the one who really captured and defeated the Greek Empire was none other than Alexander the Great, and in Chazal, his name was Alexander Mogdon, Alexander Macedonia. So a couple things about his conquest. He set out from Macedonia. We have a statue of him over here, authentic statue, that's shown from the British Museum. And and here we have a map of Alexander's conquests, of how he sets out from Macedonia. He wasn't even a king at the time, he was a general, and he launches his war against the the Persian Empire, taking it apart piece by piece. So he sets out through Asia Minor. From there, he'll come through Eretz Israel. He'll head to the south through to capture Egypt. In Egypt, he establishes the city of Alexandria. Then he comes back to Eretz Israel and heads into Asia and goes to war against the Persian Empire. Defeats the last Persian king, known as Darius III, in the year 330, and then from there actually continues farther east, all the way into India, all the way into Asia, till finally coming back, tried to rule in Babel, and then he died at a young age, and that was that. A couple things. As Alexander the Great makes his way down the coast in Eretz Israel, he wants assistance from the local countries. And people, of course, local leaders are always caught in the crossfire of what to do here. They figure to themselves, you know, you just better make sure that you bet on the right horse, that you take the right, that you go with the winning side. Because when you go with the losing side, you're going to suffer no matter what. It's not a question of who's right, who's wrong. It's more of a question of survival. So Alexander asked for assistance against the Persian army, and those who assisted him were rewarded, and those who refused to assist him were later punished. And of course, most, you know, did the calculation, who's going to win and who's going to lose, and based on that made the decision. So when he came to the Samaritans, the Shomronim, who lived in the center of Eretz Yisrael, they actually sent him assistance. And when he came to, when he approached the Kohen Gadol, who was in non-Jewish sources, non-Chazal sources, he's called Yadua, in Jewish sources, in Chazal sources, he's called Shimon HaTzadik. He asked him for assistance, and Shimon HaTzadik refused because he was loyal to the Persian king. Now, we know that he went down the coast, and he captured Gaza. It was a six-month siege till he captured Gaza. And in the fall of the year 332, we know, the Gemara in Yoma tells a story that there was a Kohen Gadol that as he was going out of Kodesh HaKadoshim, he was ma'ach b'tfilasa. He was ma'ach in his tefillah. And he said a long tefillah. And the Mishnah says you're not supposed to say a long tefillah because people get scared that the Kohen Gadol died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the story with the Kohen Gadol that he said a long tefillah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the people got worried, and after a while they just gave up and said he's probably dead, and they went in to see what happened to him or to pull him out, and as they're about to walk in, he walks out. And they tell them, what took you so long? He says, I was ma'ach b'tefillah that the Beis HaMikdash should not be destroyed. So they told him, Alti Rogel Asos Kein, don't do this because we learned in the Mishnah of Elaya Mach B'Tfilah. So the Mishnah Yoma says he wasn't Mach B'Tfilah, Shalola Havasis Yisrael. So in the Yerushalmi it says that this Kohen Gadol was none other than Shimon HaTzadik. And I think that's what Yerushalmi brings it over there. So if, according to the Yerushalmi, it was Shimon HaTzadik, then it most probably was in this year that Alexander the Great was in the siege of Gaza, and he knew that the moment the siege of Gaza will be over, Alexander the Great will then come on the coast inland to come to Yerushalayim to deal with him for not willing to send troops. And that, the Gemara in Yoma tells the story in the beginning of the fifth parak, beginning of the seventh parak, rather, the Gemara in the seventh parak that tells the story that Shimon HaTzadik, the Kusim, the Samaritans, asked from Alexander the Great permission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and Alexander the Great granted it to them. And the reason why he granted it again is because they had supported Alexander while Shimon HaTzadik refused. So when Shimon HaTzadik heard this, he dressed up in Bigdei Kahuna. Yes, Dav Samachtes, the story, Simcha Chamisha v'Teves, Yom HaGrizim, they asked permission to destroy the, again, we're talking about Teves, so as I said, the siege lasted for half a year, so the dating fits, the siege was in the autumn, and the beginning of winter, he comes to Shalim, he gave permission to the Kusim to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Alexander the Great dressed up in Migdei Kahuna, Shimon HaTzadik dressed up in Migdei Kahuna and went went the whole night with torches in his hands, and he went to greet Alexander the Great. When they met in a place called Antipatris, which is today Rosh Ha'ayin in the area near Petach Tikva, Alexander the Great sees Shimon HaTzadik. And he gets off his, he knew who they were because he, from far, Alamud HaShachar, he saw this whole group of people coming. He didn't know who it was. He says, who are they? And his servants told him, they are the Jews who rebelled against you. So you see again, Shemar Dubucha, again the idea that we're saying, they had refused to accept his leadership. When he got to Antipras, which is, as I said, Rosh Ha'ayin today, the sun was shining, and when Alexander saw Shimon HaTzadik, he got off his horse and he bowed down to him. So the his servants told him, Amulo, Melech Gadol Kamoscha, Yishtach Vali Yudi Zeh, a great king like you should bow down to this Jew. So he told him, Demusi Yokno Shalzem Natzachas Lefanai Beveis Mochamti. When I go to war, I see this image, and then I'm victorious. Josephus has it slightly different. He says that it was once at a war, and things were difficult, and then he saw this image, and then he was victorious in the war. So he says to them, what did you come for? They said, the house that they daven for your welfare, that these of the kachavim should convince you to let you destroy it. So he says, who is this? So he says, they are the Samaritans. They're in your hands, you can do them whatever you want to do. We have Nikvum Bikvehem, they pierced their heels, with Lom Bazim Bisusayim, and tied them on to the tails of the horses, and they were dragging them by the heels over the thorns, until they came to Argrizim. Kimut Shigil Argrizim, Choshur Vizarur Kashin. When they got to Argrizim, they plowed it, and planted it Kashin, which is just as what the Kusim had intended to do to the Beis HaMikdash, they did to their Tahar Gwizim. So this story, as we said, the timing, the time of the year fits. We also know from other historical sources that the Samaritans had at first been loyal to Alexander the Great, but a while later they rebelled against Alexander the Great. And we also know from Persian sources, from Greek sources, I don't have the exact source in front of me, unfortunately, in which they were punished in a method that's described over here in this story. I'm not sure them or other people were punished by having their heels pierced and being dragged over things. So the method that's mentioned in Chazal over here finds its assistance from non-Jewish sources also, that this was a method used to punish people. On Har Gerizim, the Samaritans had built a Beis HaMikdash, and archaeological artifacts from Har Gerizim have shown that it indeed was built twice. It was built once during the Persian period and destroyed somewhat, and rebuilt again during the Hellenistic period and destroyed a second time. So the two periods again match what we know, that there was a Beis HaMikdash that they had in the time of the Persian Empire. And now we're talking about the end of the Persian Empire. Lots of Persian coins were found over there on Har Gerizim. And when it was over, it was destroyed and rebuilt again at some time later during the Hellenistic period. And its final destruction was by the Hashmonai King Yochanan Harkonos, who finally captured it and destroyed it, and it's been destroyed ever since. Lots of excavations have been there. So that we also know, again, matches what we, the archaeological evidence matches what we have from the story here in the Gemara. I forgot to say, we basically, to fill in the picture, the historical picture that we have, besides we have those, the sources in Chazal, but Chazal, again, are not often going into history directly as a history book. We have Megillas Tainis, which mentions the days that were celebrated as Yom Tovim during the second Beis HaMikdash, that were declared Yom Tovim because of good things that happened. I think we gave two shiurim on that in the past. And so the Megillas Tainis is one source. The other source is a book, two books, which are actually part of Sfarim Chitzonim, the Book of the Maccabees 1 and the Book of the Maccabees 2, which are Sfarim Chitzonim. Josephus, who has the whole story of the Hashmonai period, no doubt he copied everything from the Book of the Maccabees. You can see it's actually, some sections are actually word for word by what we have in the Book of the Maccabees. We don't have the original in Hebrew. It was lost in Hebrew, was translated into Latin, into Greek, and modern times it's been translated back into Hebrew. We don't have the original, but there's no doubt that Josephus had the Book of the Maccabees, and we see the copy. So Alexander, Klaishol, rewarded Alexander by sending him a nice size precious stone, and they also honored him by naming all the children born the next year. They named him Alexander. All the children that were born were named Alexander. That, as I said, was in the year 332. We actually have some pictures over here of the Samaritan Beis HaMikdash, but we're not going to go into that now because time is not permitting. But we have some nice pictures, ruins of the Samaritan Beis HaMikdash. To this very day, the Samaritans go up to Har Gerizim. We spoke about them also. What's important to note, and it's already an issue over here in Tosfos Yeshanim and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, the Samaritans were not over there with the Zara. They were over there, Shem. The only thing was that they believed that Har Gerizim was the chosen mountain and not Yerushalayim. Now, in the time of Rabbi Meir, there was a miut, a minority, who worshipped a Roman temple, which was also nearby in High Greece. But that was a minority, and that the Gemara says so clearly in Chulin, and only Rav Meir was Choshesh. Later on, the Samaritans stopped following the practices, Jewish practices, and then they were declared Goyim l'chol davar. But until then, they were actually Jews, and the fact that they're here on High Grizim does not mean that it's an Avodah Zarah. The Dmus Yonah that the Gemara says in Chulin, in the first parak that they found on High Grizim, was at a later stage, but they had a temple, Hashem Shamayim, on High Grizim, which constitutes only Shchut Echutz, but it's not Avodah Zarah. And in Masechus Kusim it says that when a Kusim wants to do tshuva, he's got to be kofen ha'grizim and has to accept Yerushalayim, and then that's the way he and that was that is the whole issue. They were considered Jews the Choldavar, and the mitzvahs that they kept, the Gemara says they were medaktik more than Yisrael, and you can trust them for that. They didn't have a dinner, so that's the whole issue. Gary Arias, Gary Emes will not go into that. But you see that in the second Mishnah Mikdash, they were treated like Jews of Choldavar, except this issue that they worshipped Hargreaves. So, again, time doesn't permit us now to go into the excavations on Hargreaves, but as I said, the excavations match what we know. Now, a little about the period itself and its meaning. As the Rambam says, The Malchus came back to Klal Yisrael for over 200 years, until Churban Hasheni. The Rambam puts in a couple of words. He says, "Ravinu Melech min Kohanim." They appointed a king from the Kohanim, and this, of course, begins to pose a problem in itself. It says in Yerushalmi, after the Parsha of Melech and Parshas Shoftim, it says afterwards, Who vana b'kev Yisrael? La'yir la'kohanim al-levim kol shevet levi chelik v'nachalam Yisrael. The Kohanim and the Levim should not have a nachla in Klal Yisrael. So the Yerushalmi says that you don't appoint a melech from the Kohanim. That's a no-no. So, very interesting. Here they appointed a king from the Kohanim. The Chashmonaim were kings. And the Ramban in Parshas Vayichi, on the Pasuk of La'yasar shevet v'Yehuda, where Yaakov gives Yehuda the bracha lo yosef shevet me Yehuda u'mechokek ben ragla v'ad kiyov ashila v'lo yitasam, that the shevet, the scepter, the kingship should only be from shevet Yehuda. So the Ramban says, the Gemara says in the beginning of Bava Basra and in Kiddush that called the Amar Bava Basra stuff, the Allah Ramad Beis called the Amar Mebeis Chashmonai Kasina Avdo. A person who says, I come from the family of Chashmonaim, he's in Eved. Why? Because the only surviving member of the Chashmonaim family was one girl, and Hordus married her, didn't marry her, that depends on two Gesaras over there in the Gemara, but everyone else was actually wiped out by Hordus. Hordus actually obliterated any trace of the Chashmonaim family. He rebuilt every place that the Chashmonaim had built. He erased any trace of them. And so the Ramban says that this was a punishment. Why did they get such a terrible punishment that there's no trace of them left? So the Ramban says that this is a punishment because they actually violated the Isser of Lo Yosef Shevet Miyuda. Yaakov Avinu said that you can't appoint a king from the Kohanim. And or not from Shevet Yehuda, for that matter. And here they come along. So once they were victorious, and Eretz Yisrael got its independence, they should have restored a melech from Beis David. And because they didn't, so that's why they were punished, and no trace of them was left over. That's how the Ramban explains it. Interesting, Yaakov Kamenetsky says the Chazal didn't intervene because they knew that Bayis Sheni was not meant to be the ultimate Geula, and they didn't want it to look like if they appoint a king from Beis David that already the Mashiach has come. They knew it was a temporary thing. Yaakov Kamenetsky's Chazal has his own Mahalach. If we go through the history of the Chashmonaim and the Book of the Maccabees, there's one thing that repeats itself three times. And what repeats itself three times is that after the story of Hanukkah, after the Nes, Yehuda Maccabee made a treaty with Rome. And the Ramban already refers to it, the Ramban over there that we mentioned moments ago, in Chumash HaNais HaShem Yehuda, he made a treaty with Rome. Why did Yehuda Maccabee make a treaty with Rome? Because at the time, the Hellenistic Empire was already falling apart. Right after Alexander died, it broke up already into four, as it says in Daniel, Vesechas Malchusay La'arba, it broke up into four, and the two most important ones to us are the Ptolemies who were in Egypt, and the Seleucids who are in Antioch, which today is in southern Turkey, right near the northern Syrian border. So, the Seleucid Empire is disintegrating. The Roman Empire is beginning to rise to power, and they're already putting limits on the Seleucid Empire. In the year, for example, 167, Antiochus the IV, Epiphanes, the one who made the Xerus on the Jews, he went to capture Egypt, and at that moment the Roman general came and says, "You're not capturing Egypt." He finally had his opportunity to defeat the Ptolemies for good. He's about to capture Alexandria, and he says, "You're not." He says, "Let me think about it." So the Roman general took a sword and made a circle around him and says, "You can think about it, but just make a decision before you walk out of the circle." So Antiochus realized it's not happening, and he backed off. And from then on, the Seleucids were held in check by the Romans westward, and the only place they can go to capture things were towards the east. That also led to the story of when Antiochus, rumors have that Antiochus died, and when he came back to Yerushalayim, people had revolted against the Kohen Gadol who he had appointed, and that's when he got furious, and he butchered thousands of Jews in Yerushalayim, and that's when he appointed, he brought in Goyish population to Yerushalayim, and he made the decrees against the Jews at the shouldn't keep mitzvos, and converted the Beis HaMikdash into a temple, into a pagan temple, as he did to the one on High Greasy Mills. And that was the story of Hanukkah, that happened in the year 167. For 3 years, there was no Karbonis in the Beis HaMikdash. It says in Daniel, for 3 years until 164. Anyway, in 162, back to our story, in 162, Yehuda Maccabee makes a treaty with Rome. And again, the basic idea is that your enemy's enemy is your friend. So he makes a treaty with Rome, and the treaty with Rome is basically they won't attack each other and they'll defend each other, etc. Now this this repeated itself with later brothers of the Hashmonai. Yonatan Hashmonai, 10 years later, once again makes the same treaty, renews the treaty with Rome, and the third brother, the last surviving ruling brother, there were five brothers, actually Hashmonaim, in the year 140, 141, Shimon also renews the treaty with Rome. So this seems like to be not really very significant, but it is actually more significant than you might think, because the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah says like this. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah in Avches Amud Beis, the Gemara says like this. Me'o Shmonim Shana, Akodem Shenechav Abayis, Pashta Malchus Arishal Yisrael. 180 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Roman Malchus was poshed on Klal Yisrael. The Romans were poshed and controlled Klal Yisrael 180 years before the Churban. So let's take this and let's assume, just for make life easier with the numbers, that the Churban was in the year 70. That the Churban was in the year 70, and Lamaisa the Gemara says the Churban was in the year 70. Lamaisa the Gemara says the Roman Malchus even began even earlier than that, 26 years before that. In other words, 206 years from before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Malchus HaRisha, the Roman government, is controlling Klal Yisrael. So in other words, while the Hashmonaim are in power, the Gemara calls it under Roman control. Except that for the first 26 years, the Romans and the Hashmonaim were pretty much even. They treated each other with respect. They had some deal with them. So we don't call that Pashta Malchus HaRishal Yisrael. But 26 years later, 180 years before the Churban, which means we're talking about the year 110 B.C., we're talking about in the heart of Yochanan Harkonnen's rule, Alexander Yanai, who's going to be the most powerful Hashmonai king, and the Gemara calls it Pashta Malchus HaRishal Yisrael, the ruling on the Roman rule. So how is that? So it must be, again, that the true that the Hashmonaim had independence, but the fact that they made this treaty with Rome was what actually gave them the power. And I was the Seleucid Empire let them, and eventually we know from the Book of the Maccabees that the Seleucid Empire is the one that eventually gave the Jews independence in some form or another. They let Yonasan become Kohen Gadol. They backed off and gave him autonomy, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that they had made this treaty with Rome. And the Greeks were afraid of the Romans, and they were held in check, as we said, and therefore they let him, we know Antiochus the Seventh, for example, he went against King Yochanan Harkonnes, he laid siege to Jerusalem for a year, but he didn't want to destroy the Hasmonai kingdom. All he wanted to do was that the Hasmonai should back off. They took territories that didn't belong to them, he's losing taxes, and all he wanted them is that they should back off from those territories, which eventually they did. But he didn't want to destroy him. And it could be the reason why he didn't want to destroy him was, again, because he was afraid of Rome. So the Gemara says clearly that the Hasmonaim, with all their independence that they had, are ruling under Rome, are considered to be Malchus HaRishal Yisrael. So the Ran says an unbelievable thing in the Drushos. The Ran learns Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda is not a bracha, but rather it's a form of a prophecy. That Yaakov Avinu is saying prophecy that a king for Am Yisrael shall always be from Shevet Yehuda. So the Ran asks, well, how did this bracha become true if in the second Beis HaMikdash the king was not from Shevet Yehuda, he was from the Hasmonaim? So then it didn't become true. So the Ran says like this. He says that it's because it wasn't real Malchus. And I was in, if it's a real Malchus, real independent Malchus, then it's going to be from Shevet Yehuda. But in Bayis Sheni, it wasn't real Malchus, because they were under Roman control. And if they're under Roman control, so the Hasmonai kings are like vassal kings. And that's already not considered a kingship. So Mamela, the Brach of Yaakov Avinu didn't apply to that. The Brach of Yaakov Avinu applied when there will actually be independence. But when there's no independence, so then the bracha doesn't apply. So you have a person who you appoint king, but he's not the one who makes the real decisions, so therefore he's not the king. And that's how the Ran explains, that's why the bracha of Yaakov Avinu, it's not a chisaron in fulfillment of the bracha of Yaakov Avinu, because the Hasmonaim ruled under Roman rule. And I don't remember if he brings this Gemara here, it's in Drasha Saran, but it's clearly he's basing it on this Gemara over here, that the Gemara calls it Pashta Machas HaRishal Yisrael during the time of the heart of the Hasmonai dynasty. So that's an important thing to point out, to fill in story. A couple of artifacts that are important for us, and we know the Gemara says in Shkolim that when a person goes into the Harabais, he's supposed to bow down at 13 places. And where are the 13 places? These are the 13 places where the Greeks breached the Shloshes HaPratzos. They breached 13 breaches in the Sarek. And when Bnei Hasmonai came back and were able to oust the Greeks from the Heichal, so they refenced them, and they made a takana that everyone who goes, passes by, should bow down opposite the place where the breach was to thank Hashem for the fact that we were able to get rid of the Greeks. What was the Sorek that irked the Greeks so much? So Josephus writes that on the Sorek there were tablets in Latin and in Roman, in Latin and in Greek, which warn the foreigners that they are not permitted to pass there and punishable by death. It makes sense because the Beis HaMikdash is a place where even Goyim are welcome. Ki beisi beis tefila yikar lechol ha'amim. My house is a house of tefila for all nations. So the Goyim are welcome also. And Shlomo HaMelech, when he inaugurated the Beis HaMikdash, he says, if Nei Yisrael daven, you should accept it. If they daven properly. And if a guy comes in the Avon, you should accept his tefillah no matter what. Goyim are allowed, but there's a hierarchy where people are allowed to go in, and Goyim are allowed into a certain part, and Yisrael are allowed into a certain part, Kohanim into a certain part. There's a hierarchy, and the non-Jews are not permitted past the Soreg. So the Soreg had these stones, and one or two of these stones have actually been found. Let's see if we can find it here. Okay. Here we have a model of the second Beis HaMikdash as designed by Rav Zalman Karen. This model is today in the Kotel tunnels. And you see the red arrows are pointing to a white fence in which he put over there. The Sarig itself wasn't such a solid wall. The Sarig gives an idea of like a mesh, a type of fence. And on top of it, he has these stones. And we're going to take a look at the stone. 1.5 of these stones were found. And this is a Mishnah actually in Talmud, Lifnim Imen Sarig. Inside from Arbais is a Sarig, Kavu Asar Tfachim, Ushlosh is a Protos Hayusham Shaprotos Malchi Yavon. And the Malchi Yavon breached it in 13 places. And what you see over here on the left is half a stone that comes from the Sarig. It's written in Greek. On the right is a reconstruction of the entire stone. We'll soon see how we know what the rest said. But basically, this sign said in Greek that anyone who ventures past this fence or this place, any non-Jew, he's Domei Beroshu. He will be punishable by death. He's responsible for his own death. And interestingly, is that according to Josephus, the Romans permitted the Jews to execute even a Roman soldier if he did venture past this, past the Sarik. Okay, historians doubt that very much, the accuracy of but that's what Josephus writes. So you see the Greek, the one on the left is half a stone, which is today in the Rockefeller Museum or the Israel Museum, and the complete stone from which the replica was made is this stone over here, which is sitting in the museum in Istanbul. This was discovered when Eretz Yisrael was under the control of the Ottoman Empire, and the stone made its way to the museum in Istanbul. And this is a stone that in Greek, it warns you, again, what we saw before, as you see, this is one of the two. These two artifacts are the only artifacts that we can say definitely came from the Beis HaMikdash, and we know what the purpose was in the Beis HaMikdash. A lot of other stones are probably lying around, which are lying used in other buildings. We'll never know where they came from exactly, but these stones, we can say for sure, we know exactly where they came from, and they are artifacts for Hanukkah. So this was a special, illustrious period in the history of Klal Yisrael, Rabim Biat Ba'atim, Tzmeim Biat Taharim, Mishram Biat Tzadikim, that the Jews were able to oust the Yevanim. The Greeks, actually, the Greek culture threatened the entire existence of the Jewish people. We know from the Book of the Maccabees 2 that in Yerushalayim they had made a gymnasium with Olympics, and the Kohanim would leave the Avodah from the Beis HaMikdash to go and spend time watching what's going on with the Olympics. And this was before the Gzeres of Antiochus. The lifestyle of the Greeks, the lifestyle for pleasure, had been taking over their whole empire, and all the nations around Eretz Yisrael, from the time of Tanakh, Ammon, Moab, Edom, Plishtim, whatever, had lost their identity by probably as a result of the Hellenistic Empire. If we compare the Persians, so when they made a decree, they sent it to each nation, Medina Kechsava, each nation with their own script, and each nation with their own language, the Greeks were just the opposite. They were very imposing, not necessarily by force, but they were very imposing with their culture over everyone else. It had an impact on the Hebrew language also. In the Mishnah alone, you have over 100 words that their source actually comes from Greek. And the entire existence of Klal Yisrael, Torah, was all threatened at this time. And if not for the handful of people, Matisyo, Ben Yochanan, and his five sons who took control and led this fight against all odds, we probably won't be here today. We won't know what would have happened to Klal Yisrael if not for those handful of people. So the Gemara says that although Megillas Tainis was batel when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because all the Yom Tovim already had no more significance once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the two that remain are Chanukah and Purim, because there that nace has an impact, Adah Yom Hazeh. So what's important for us, we're living also in a society which is very imposing upon us, not necessarily by force, but it's having its impact on Klal Yisrael. And it's this Chanukah is a time to get chizuk, courage, be able to withstand the temptations of the outside world, and to study Torah stronger.